Then it's the first task of Michelle, giving us an update on the work plan. Michelle, the floor is yours.
Thank you to Nili for introducing me. I'm not sure how you've approached the updates in the past, but what I did was I put a slide deck together that focuses on the projects that aren't on the current agenda. So I'll go through the slide deck, and Javid has come from our implementation, the IFRIC team, to help me if I get stuck on the detail of some of the smaller amendments, make sure I don't go wrong, and Martin will give an overview on the FI, the financial instruments section. So if that's okay with you, I'll keep
going. I think in the past we have done it really briefly, and then if you have questions, then you put your cards and ask them questions topic by topic.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so on slide 3 of the pack is the publications that we have issued this year, and I've identified those that we issued since your last meeting in June. So that's the definition of the business and the proposed taxonomy update. And we'll look at the definition of a business in a bit more detail. On slide 4, we've got a slide that we've been using to kind of give people some awareness about the larger consultations that we expect over the next 18 months. So we already have the financial instruments with characteristics of equity discussion paper out, and we'll be discussing that later today. And then there are five other major consultations that we're expecting. Plus, we also will do some outreach on the core model for dynamic risk management. So I don't know, the next three slides look at the definition of a business, which was the amendment that we issued in the period since we last met. So slide 5 sets out the problem. The definition of a business amendment arose from the post-implementation review of IFRS 3, where there were two projects coming out of that post-implementation review, goodwill and impairment, which we'll talk about later, and the definition of a business, where we had some feedback about it was the definition was too broad, it lacked clarity, and it was difficult to understand some of the bits around the process. So what we've done is two things. Firstly, you'll see on slide 6, we've introduced a optional concentration test, where we say if substantially all of the fair value of the asset is in a single asset or a group of similar assets. If you answer yes to that question, you can say this isn't a business, and then you're into an asset acquisition. If you say no, then there's a second step where you need to assess whether you have acquired a substantive process. And on slide 7, we've set out how you do the assessment of the substantive process, and I'm not going to go through those detailed tests unless you have specific questions.
Well, the optional concentration test, I would assume that for this exercise, goodwill is not deemed to be an asset. Is that right? Because very often you have it that 80% of the acquisition is goodwill. Now, if I said concentration on one asset, and I would
does not include
consider goodwill as an asset in that context, then this may very often be met, but it's completely contradictive. Mm-hmm. That it would be met. So,
no.
Because with all the discussion around is goodwill an asset or not, I think in this case we're going to say for this purpose we wouldn't consider goodwill as an asset. Right?
Yeah, because goodwill is the residual. So. Okay, so on slide 9 I've listed out the active projects and I've linked them to the agenda items. So I'll go through those projects that we're not planning to discuss today. So the first one is the business combinations under common control project. And I'm pretty sure you've discussed this in the past, haven't you? So the board have now set the scope for that project. I think that took us a bit of time to get through working on the scope. And it's now at the stage where we have looked at the two different methods and the board is trying to go through whether it should have a single method or a different method. So that's set out on slide 11. And in doing that assessment of whether we have one method or two methods, we've been looking at the various primary users of the financial statements and how the information they get and the risks that they get. So, for instance, we've been looking at NCI might be interested in what the residual risks would be. The debt lenders might be more focused on liquidity risk. So there's quite a lot of work going on that project at the moment. We have papers going to some of our advisory groups in December with our national standard setters advisory groups. And I guess they will come back to the board at the beginning of next year. So I would expect us to be consulting with you next year on when we've got looking at those different methods. So turning to slide 13, that provides you with an overview of our project on, or all of our work on better communications. So our work on better communications is in four areas. Primary financial statements, where we're looking at the primary financial statements, and that's one of the big topics we're talking about today. The disclosure initiative, our management commentary work, which is also on the agenda, and then the delivery of content information, which is the taxonomy. What we're not talking about today is the disclosure initiative. And if you turn over to slide 14, you'll be able to see how we've broken the work on the disclosure initiative down. So there's a number of things we've already done to try and improve communications under the disclosure initiative. Those are the amendments that we made to IS1 back in 2014. Then in 2015, we did amendments to IS7. And just last week, the board issued another amendment to IS1 and IS8 to clarify the meaning of the definition of material. So that was published. So in fact, this slide isn't quite up to date. So what we did was we tried to align the definition across our standards and across the conceptual framework. We've moved some of them as supporting material into the definition, and the aim really is to just make a clarification that the amendment will be effective 1 January 2020. In terms of what the project team are working on at the moment, so having finished off the principles of disclosure and analysed the feedback that we received on the principles of disclosure project, the board has put two new projects onto its agenda. The first is set out on slide 15, which is what we call the targeted standards level review. And I think we sought advice from you in June about which standards might be the best standards for the board to think about reviewing. So what the board has done is, I think in July and September, it spent some time thinking about how it should set disclosures in financial statements, and it's written some guidance which is available in the board papers. And what the board plans to do when it's thinking about disclosures is think about the issue and then think about what information stakeholders are asking for and why they're asking for it, so how they will use that information. Then look up what disclosures might be needed to support recognition and measurement requirements that we've got in the standard. Think about the cost benefits and then assess the effectiveness of disclosures. So what the team are now doing is, having agreed that sort of guidance for the board, they're looking at IFRS 13 and IAS 19 and the disclosures in those two standards. So they're very much in a thinking mode and looking at the work we've previously done on disclosures for those two standards, and they'll probably come back next year and discuss that element of the project with you. And then finally, the board is also going to look at disclosures around accounting policies. The board put that project on its agenda in July, and it had some initial discussions at its last board meeting in September.
One quick question. I remember in the meeting before last, there was one topic which was IFRS information outside the financial statements that was shown in the list of priorities. Where has that gone?
I think it's gone to the PFS project, that that section of it, because in the PFS project, and we'll talk about it later, we'll be talking about management performance.
Yeah, but that was non-IFRS information in the financial statements, but this is the other way around, non-IFRS information outside.
Yeah, so I think I'm going off of memory right now. I'll have to double check, but I believe what the board had discussed was that there was two things going on. One was just mixed perspectives on how to handle the issue. Aisha is actually on the project, so you can jump in if I'm misremembering. And then part of it was in looking at what the key priorities are, where we could actually progress the project and make the biggest difference to the financial reports. It was determined there are other places where we could invest the resources to make more of a difference. Feel free to jump in, Aisha, if there are other.
Okay, so that is currently off the table.
Correct.
That was the comments received on the discussion paper was not seen very high interest in this.
That's right.
Okay, financial instruments?
Yeah.
Okay, so on financial instruments, we have the FICE project, which we discuss later today in the afternoon session, so I will not say anything about that. And then we have dynamic risk management, and I think the best slide to say where we stand is slide number 19. So we have really discussed the model in detail. And in the recent board meetings, we have also discussed the performance assessment of that model, so kind of effectiveness and when it should qualify, what will happen when it disqualifies, and all these difficult things about hedge accounting. And next step is, okay, that we will also discuss, do we include all the financial assets which are qualified as fair value through OCI? And also, I think it's, we have included core demand deposits, but also the question is, okay, equity, when equity is used as a source of funding, which is done by many banks, and that is also the implication for the model, should we allow that, and what are the implications? That is the next discussion at the board, and if we have finalized that, we have already planned that we do a kind of outreach with banks, not with a discussion paper, but more so about the core elements of the model. And why we are doing that, because we had the experience of our portfolio approach, which we had in a discussion paper, which we worked many years on that, and the feedback was not so positive. And therefore, we want to not make the same mistake, so we want to test the model a little bit earlier and get feedback, do we go into the right direction, yes or no? And if yes, we continue. If no, I don't know what we should do, but maybe. Because you know that we have this kind of issue. We still have IAS 39, which allows hedge accounting, and in IFRS 9 hedge accounting, not everybody has to use it. And we have said, okay, we will continue to allow using hedge accounting models under 39 until we have finalized this project. So if we're not finalized, we have to do something with 39, but what exactly that is, we have to discuss then later. That is all what I wanted to say regarding the dynamic risk management. What is new on the agenda, which is on slide 23, you all know that the interbanking offer rates, LIBOR or Euribor, however these rates are called, there will be, I think, a limited time where people can use that, where it is in kind of done by the bank because regulators want to stop that. And we're getting more and more questions, what are the implications of that, especially for accounting? And the board has decided in the summer that, okay, the staff will look at that and bring to one of the next, maybe in December, the next board meetings, what are the results and what we can do about. And I think that is with high priority because, as I said, many banks knocking on our door and asking questions, what does it mean? And I think especially for hedge accounting, because if these benchmark rates are not any longer existing, what does it mean? Because our literature, is it highly probable? And all these kind of questions, which people looking for an answer. And we know that, okay, the time when these rates will disappear is not so far. And therefore, I think the board has decided to put this on the agenda and has asked the staff to come back and addressing what are the issues and can we help with the issues. That is all about financial instruments. Any question to that?
Maybe Martin, only one quick comment. Again, like IFRS 9, the focus of this is clearly the financial industry. Don't forget the ordinary corporates in the process. I think that happened to a certain extent with IFRS 9. That's why corporates still today got to find their way through IFRS 9, because that's a huge thing and only a small piece applies to them. So whatever.
To IBOR or to?
No, to the entire dynamic risk management and all that. Don't forget that corporates need to understand how much of that is actually relevant for them, rather than throwing it all at them and say, well, find your way through it, which honestly I think was a bit what happened with IFRS 9, that corporates had to find their way through, and still today, some, if I only see the discussion about trade receivables, it is difficult, and that's why I fully understand that this is needed, but just communication-wise, please make sure that the corporates understand the level of relevance for them.
Yeah. Maybe one comment to that, man. When we don't make standards for banks or insurance companies, we're making standards for the instruments. But I understand that, but also especially for dynamic risk management. I have not heard any kind of non-bank which is using, maybe with one exception with this insurance industry, but which has used this dynamic risk management about netting risk and then manage it on a net position. It is not what I heard from any company outside the financial sector. And when we started the dynamic risk management project, we said, okay, that is not, should not be limited to interest rate risk management, because there is a kind of this kind of net margin hedging also with foreign currencies, which is done by maybe corporates more, but also with some kind of other risk. And in the portfolio approach, which we had the discussion paper on, we said, okay, we will do that also for other kind of risk, which are managed in the same dynamic manner as interest rate risk. But it was already very, very difficult. And therefore, we decided to concentrate now really on interest rate risk management in a dynamic way by banks, because I see it only by banks. And therefore, I think we should focus the outreach really on financial institutions. On a later stage, clearly, we want to get more than input. Does it happen this for other kind of risk, foreign exchange, and can we develop the model also for that? But I think it is too. This project is already very, very difficult and complicated to understand, and we don't want to make it over complex because it involves other kind of risk. And therefore, I think we decided to start with dynamic risk management of interest rate risk. And we only aware that it is done by banks and maybe insurance companies, but I have not heard any company outside the financial sector who is doing that. But if you maybe have input to that, we can plan, if we do our outreach, then also to include others. But as I said, I have not heard who is doing that outside.
No, I think it's really rather to make this transparent, exactly what you said, that you don't expect anyone outside the financial industry be affected. So it's more communication thing.
Okay, that's understood.
It's the same thing with insurance. As in, when the insurance standard came out, suddenly there were discussions around whether a maintenance contract could, under certain circumstances, fall under insurance. And suddenly all corporates had to go into this and check whether there is any relevance. So communication-wise, you could help to minimize this effort of evaluating, am I affected or not? That's more communication thing than a content topic.
Okay. Thanks, Good.
Okay, so moving on to slide 25, we have the research pipeline projects, and there are three of those that we are expecting to start in the next few months. We will start discussions with our advisory group on our pensions projects, on which is looking at a very narrow scope of pensions, those where we have returns that are dependent upon on asset returns. We will also shortly start work on our SMEs that are subsidiaries projects. So in that project, we will be looking at whether we can help the disclosures that are in subsidiary financial statements. So it will only apply to SMEs, subsidiaries that qualify as SMEs within the IFRS for SMEs standard, and then we'll see whether they could apply the disclosure requirements of that standard whilst following the recognition and requirements of full IFRS. And we also hope to start our work on provisions, because we did a lot of that work when we were looking at the definition of liabilities in the conceptual framework. project. Slide 26 outlines those projects. I don't have any other comments on those projects at this time, unless anyone else does. And then slide 27 looks at
maybe
where...
Maybe on 26. The IS37 topic, will that only be on provisions, or will that also touch on contingent assets? Because contingent asset is in IS37.
It's a very narrow scope project. It's not looking to open up more than just conforming parts of IS37 to the new conceptual framework.
And the variable and contingent consideration, could you just elaborate a little bit on that? Because I know the term from IFRS 15, so I don't think this is what is meant here, to dig back into IFRS 15, or does it?
No, I don't think it's more of a cross-cutting project where we had some feedback in the agenda consultation about different requirements and different standards. So the first thing we're going to look is look across the standards and do some research work. We had some initial discussions at our World Standard Setters Conference earlier this year. So it's looking across the conceptual framework as well.
Okay. And then finally, the IS29 one, it's said to be, again, pretty narrow. Have you received feedback that in the light of Argentina qualifying again, which makes the topic more prominent for people, more than Venezuela did, that maybe more work is needed on that? Because frankly, my company has now started to apply it, and it's a very painful thing. It is a very bad standard, to be very honest. And it leaves more questions open than it answers questions and can result in a very odd accounting result. So we were close to showing $1 billion of revenue in Venezuela for Q4 simply because of the different movement of inflation versus currency. Yeah. So if this comes, because if it goes on, Turkey will pretty soon be on the list. Then the topic gets bigger and bigger, and more companies will be confronted with it, and that will be very, very difficult because it's such an old and to be honest, bad standard. So that's why this very narrow thing, like rather broaden the application of a bad standard. I don't know whether that is an overly good idea.
Yeah, so
this was from the group of Latin American standard setters have been pressurizing us and for some time to look at opening the scope of this standard. So this came from the agenda consultation, and we have been working quite closely with the group of Latin American standard setters about broadening the scope, and they have been doing some work. What I'd asked them to look at is those countries that were sort of at the margin on the of falling within the scope. We have been talking to Argentina, and we've been monitoring the situation down there, but we haven't had any other feedback at this point. I guess we'll look at it again in we are actually having a meeting of the emerging economies in Argentina in the spring of next year, so we'll probably put it on the agenda for that meeting.
But I think it would be important to not only talk to the countries that are in hyperinflation, but to now start to talk to companies that have subsidiaries in countries with hyperinflation, because then the interplay between IS 29 and 21 comes in, and this is what I think creates some real problems. And that's why I mean now with Argentina and maybe Turkey coming, the number of companies that have subsidiaries, significant subsidiaries in countries with hyperinflation is going up. Yeah. And I doubt that they know what wave is coming to them.
So there's two observations. One is, as part of being on the research pipeline, the board will prioritize with the next wave of projects what's given events in the economy, given resources, et cetera, what are the more pressing issues? So given what's happened with Argentina and other countries, it could be the case that this project may be next on the list to prioritize. And then the other thing is that as part of an active research project, one of the things that we do is to have all those conversations to better assess how pervasive is the issue and actually define what the scope of the project is. So some of the questions that you're mentioning will come into the research phase.
And a research project is not that we're doing anything for sure that we want to solve it. It's also to understand better the problem and if there is a solution to solve the problem and if we agree on the problem. Mm-hmm. Research does not automatically mean that we're doing something. Ian.
Yes, I can only echo about Argentina. I was on the phone to our Argentinian affiliate, and if you're reaching out, I would encourage that you don't only talk to the standard setters in Argentina, but it's a highly political situation. The finance ministry, the taxation authorities, the big four accounting firms, everybody's got a point of view, and I would encourage that you reach out there. I think it does have a very significant impact, and it's extremely... I worked in Russia in the 1990s. It's an extremely difficult standard to apply as a preparer in the local economy at a time when you're already super busy on other stuff. And then I can see from trying to model it on the impact on our consolidated results, the interplay of IAS 29 with the fact that the currency has reduced by at least 50% during this year gives an increasingly nonsensical number in the consolidated results. And this is an area where IAS 29, I think, takes a different approach from the US GAAP standard. So I think once corporates start reporting Argentina for the 2018 year end, I could imagine this topic may get a lot more visibility and comment from users, because the numbers that we will be giving out to our users, they will have difficulty interpreting those.
And Martin, I think it's not only about changing, it is a question of whether there should be educational efforts now that a standard that was completely irrelevant to most preparers outside certain regions now becoming very relevant to many, whether that isn't something that should make you entertain into education efforts, because frankly, I doubt that the majority of investors and analysts know anything about IAS 29, and they will be very surprised if there's suddenly revenues go up and down and things moving around in the P&L in odd ways without understanding what it is.
Good. Okay.
Okay. Slide 27 sets out our post-implementation reviews. As we've discussed IFRS 3 definition of a business, the completed projects IFRS 8 and IFRS 13, we will be issuing project summaries on those probably later this year. And then we hope to start the post-implementation reviews of 10, 11 and 12 next year. In the following slides talk about how we support implementation. I think probably slides 29 and 30 you've seen before. Slide 31 is a summary of where we are with our various smaller amendments to standards. So we, in terms of upcoming IFRS amendments, we've actually issued the definition of material, as I said earlier on. On property, plant and equipment, we are taking, the staff are taking a paper to the board in October, having spent some time consulting with some of our advisory bodies on what our next steps should be. What we will do is recommend that we clarify the meaning of testing and that we require, and that there is an amendment to require disclosure of the sale proceeds arising from testing. And maybe we will look again at the extractive, at this area when we look at the extractives project. In terms of classification of liabilities, that is also going to the next board meeting, and the staff will be making recommendations on how to proceed with that exposure draft. And the staff will recommend that the ED is finalised such that a liability is classified as current if the entity does not have the right at the end of the reporting period to defer the settlement of that liability for at least 12 months. And we'll provide some clarification around the meaning of the right to defer. In terms of where we are in, where we've got exposure drafts that have now closed for comments, so the green column on slide 31, accounting policies and accounting estimates, we are still working through the feedback we've had. We've had some discussions with the advisory bodies in October of this year, but we got some mixed feedback, so we are, as staff, still working through that feedback. Accounting policies changes, the comment period ended in the summer, and we haven't yet taken the summary of comment letters to the board. We'll probably do that by the end of this year.
In December.
Yeah, so we had some different feedback there. And the availability of a refund, which was an amendment to one of the IFRICs, that's really on hold at the moment while we think about the research project on pensions as well. In terms of upcoming exposure drafts, we will issue an exposure draft to help people with the cost to consider when you're deciding is if a contract is onerous. The exposure draft, the board has approved the drafting of the exposure draft, so it's still going through its balloting processes. But what that will do is identify that the costs that directly relate to the contract are the costs that you take into consideration, and we'll provide a number of examples to try and explain the concept that we're using. The Disclosure Initiative Accounting Policies Project is in its early stages. That was one of the areas that came out from the principles of disclosures. The board's had some tentative discussions last month on that. And then in terms of projects that we are in their more early stages, the board will start some discussions this month on whether to update the reference in IFRS 3 to the new conceptual framework. This is quite a technical issue that falls out because of the change in the definition of a liability from the conceptual framework. Okay. Is there anything else? Any comments?
The project of goodwill and impairment, is it part of disclosure management process, or is it something to do with replacement of the existing impairment of assets standard?
So it's not in the disclosure initiative. It's a separate active project that we are looking at, and it is on the agenda for today. One of the things it is looking at, which is probably confusing, is improving the disclosures about acquisitions, but we can pick it up later today. Okay. Well, on slide 32, I just wanted to highlight that we do have a lot of resources on our website, and we get some feedback that people aren't aware of the volume of resources and the webinars and things that are available. So I would encourage you to continue to look at our website when you're looking for things, or contact Isa or myself, and we can try and direct you to where you might find resources to support you. And then the last few slides just look at how we have been supporting implementation of IFRS 17, which I'm not going to dare to go through, but I can.
Why not?
I probably can. Actually, I've done so many seminars on IFRS 17 when I've been travelling around the world. The guys gave me an honorary IFRS 17 badge.
Maybe I give a short update on 17, because when we know that we have the TRG, which should be helped to companies to implement. We had a meeting, or two-day meeting, in September, and we have discussed overall now more than 81 submissions which were addressed to us. We have seen that, the quality, but I think the pervasiveness of issues coming to us has decreased, so it is more detailed, which I think is not a broader issue. And we had planned to have a THG meeting in December, but we have seen now with the submission, where the submission deadline was last week, that we're getting more and more, I would say, smaller issues, which we will not discuss at THG, and we have received one or two issues which maybe would be valid to have a THG discussion, but we have decided to postpone that THG meeting to next year, which is then in April next year, so we will not have a December THG meeting. And in addition, we had in the October board meeting, we have discussed issues which I think were not THG issues, that is not implementation, interpretation of the word. That is where people, I would say, are not happy with the standards. They want to change the standards. They think, okay, the cost benefits are not in line. And there are more than around about 20 issues which people have addressed to us, to THG, to EFRAG has sent us a letter with some issues, but also the CFO forum and other individual companies addressing issues. We presented all these issues to the board in the October meeting, and the staff has also set up some criteria which should be fulfilled if the board would like to address this issue. The board agreed to this criteria, and there will be in December, I think, in the next meeting, where the staff coming back to kind of addressing all those issues against these criteria and what could be done if the board will then agree if we're doing anything, so opening the standard. So that are the recent developments in the insurance accounting standard. Any question to that? Any additional question to other topics on the work plan? That is not the case. Then thank you, Michelle, for updating us.